This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Patricia C. Reedy's Dealing with Dragons.
Dealing with Dragons by Patricia C. Reedy.
1. In which Cimmerine refuses to be proper and has a conversation with a frog. Linderwall was a large kingdom just east of the Mountains of Morning, where philosophers were highly respected and the number 5 was fashionable. The climate was unremarkable. The knights kept their armor brightly polished mainly for show. It had been centuries since a dragon had come east. There were the usual periodic problems with royal children and uninvited fairy godmothers, but they were always the sort of thing that could be cleared up by finding the proper prince or princess to marry the unfortunate child a few years later. All in all, Linderwall was a very prosperous and pleasant place. Cimmerine hated it. Cimmerine was the youngest daughter of the King of Linderwall, and her parents found her rather trying. Their first 6 daughters were perfectly normal princesses, with long golden hair and sweet dispositions, each more beautiful than the last. Cimmerine was lovely enough, but her hair was jet black, and she wore it in braids instead of curled and pinned like her sisters. And she wouldn't stop growing. Her parents were quite sure that no prince would want to marry a girl who could look him in the eye, instead of gazing up at him becomingly through her lashes. As for the girl's disposition, well, when people were being polite, they said she was strong-minded. When they were angry or annoyed with her, they said she was as stubborn as a pig. The king and queen did the best they could. They hired the most superior tutors and governesses to teach Cimmerine all the things a princess ought to know. Dancing, embroidery, drawing, and etiquette. There was a great deal of etiquette, from the proper way to curtsy before a visiting prince to how loudly it was permissible to scream when being carried off by a giant. Linderwall still had an occasional problem with giants. Cimmerine found it all very dull, but she pressed her lips together and learned it anyway. When she couldn't stand it any longer, she would go down to the castle armory and bully the armsmaster into giving her a fencing lesson. As she got older, she found her regular lessons more and more boring. Consequently, the fencing lessons became more and more frequent. When she was 12, her father found out.
"Fencing is not proper behavior for a princess,"
he told her in the gentle but firm tone recommended by the court philosopher. Cimmerine tilted her head to one side. "Why not?"
It's simply not done."
Cimmerine considered.
"Aren't I a princess?"
"Yes, of course you are, my dear,"
said her father with relief. He had been bracing himself for a storm of tears, which was the way his other daughters reacted to reprimands.
"Well, I fence,"
Cimmerine said, with the air of one delivering an unshakable argument.
"So it is too done by a princess."
"That doesn't make it proper, dear,"
put in her mother gently.
"Why not?"
"It simply doesn't,"
the queen said firmly, and that was the end of Cimmerine's fencing lessons. When she was 14, her father discovered that she was making the court magician teach her magic.
"How long has this been going on?"
he asked wearily when she arrived in response to his summons.
"Since you stopped my fencing lessons. I suppose you're going to tell me it isn't proper behavior for a princess."
"Well, yes. I mean, it isn't proper."
"Nothing interesting seems to be proper."
"You might find things more interesting if you applied yourself a little more, dear."
"I doubt it," Cimmerine muttered, but she knew better than to argue when her mother used that tone of voice. And that was the end of the magic lessons. The same thing happened over the Latin lessons from the court philosopher, the cooking lessons from the castle chef, the economics lessons from the court treasurer, and the juggling lessons from the court minstrel. Cimmerine began to grow rather tired of the whole business. When she was 16, Cimmerine summoned her fairy godmother.
Cimmerine, my dear, this sort of thing really isn't done,
the fairy said, fanning away the scented blue smoke that had accompanied her appearance.
People keep telling me that.
You should pay attention to them, then,
her godmother said irritably.
I'm not used to being hauled away from my tea without warning. And you aren't supposed to call me unless it is a matter of utmost importance to your life and future happiness.
It is of utmost importance to my life and future happiness.
Oh, very well. You're a bit young to have fallen in love already. Still, you always have been a precocious child. Tell me about him.
Cimmerine sighed.
It isn't a him.
Enchanted, is he?
The fairy said with a spark of interest.
A frog, perhaps? That used to be quite popular, but it seems to have gone out of fashion lately. Nowadays, all the princes are talking birds or dogs or hedgehogs.
No, no, I'm not in love with anyone.
Then what exactly is your problem?
The fairy said in exasperation.
This!
Cimmerine gestured at the castle around her.
Embroidery lessons and dancing and being a princess.
My dear Cimmerine, it's your heritage.
It's boring.
Boring?
The fairy did not appear to believe what she was hearing.
Boring. I want to do things, not sit around all day and listen to the court minstrel make up songs about how brave Daddy is and how lovely his wife and daughters are.
Nonsense, my dear. This is just a stage you're going through. You'll outgrow it soon, and you'll be very glad you didn't do anything rash.
Cimmerine looked at her godmother suspiciously.
You've been talking to my parents, haven't you?
Well, they do try to keep me up to date on what my godchildren are doing.
I thought so, said Cimmerine, and bade her fairy godmother a polite goodbye. A few weeks later, Cimmerine's parents took her to a tourney in Satham by the mountains, the next kingdom over. Cimmerine was quite sure that they were only taking her because her fairy godmother had told them that something had better be done about her, and soon. She kept this opinion to herself. Anything was better than the endless rounds of dancing and embroidery lessons at home. Cimmerine realized her mistake almost as soon as they reached their destination, for the king of Satham by the mountains had a son. He was a golden-haired, blue-eyed, and exceedingly handsome prince, whose duties appeared to consist entirely of dancing attendance on Cimmerine.
Isn't he handsome?
Cimmerine's lady-in-waiting sighed.
Yes,
Cimmerine said without enthusiasm.
Unfortunately, he isn't anything else.
Whatever do you mean?
The lady-in-waiting said in astonishment.
He has no sense of humor. He isn't intelligent. He can't talk about anything except tourneys, and half of what he does say he gets wrong. I'm glad we're only staying 3 weeks. I don't think I could stand to be polite for him for much longer than that.
But what about your engagement?
What engagement?
The lady-in-waiting tried to mutter something about a mistake, but Cimmerine put up her chin in her best princess fashion and insisted on an explanation. Finally, the lady-in-waiting broke down.
I overheard their majesties discussing it yesterday.
She sniffled into her handkerchief.
The stipulations and covenants and contracts and settlements have all been drawn up, and they're going to sign them the day after tomorrow and announce it on the Thursday.
I see. Thank you for telling me. You may go.
The lady-in-waiting left, and Cimmerine went to see her parents. They were annoyed and a little embarrassed to find that Cimmerine had discovered their plans, but they were still very firm about it.
We were going to tell you tomorrow, when we signed the papers,
her father said.
We knew you'd be pleased, dear,
her mother said, nodding.
He's such a good-looking boy.
But I don't want to marry Prince Therendil.
Well, it's not exactly a brilliant match,
Cimmerine's father said, frowning.
But I didn't think you'd care how big his kingdom is.
It's the prince I don't care for.
That's a great pity, dear, but it can't be helped. I'm afraid it isn't likely that you'll get another offer.
Then I won't get married at all.
Both her parents looked slightly shocked.
My dear Cimmerine, that's out of the question. You're a princess, It simply isn't done.
I'm too young to get married.
Your great-aunt Rose was married at 16,
her mother pointed out.
One really can't count all those years she spent asleep under that dreadful fairy's curse.
I won't marry the Prince of Satham by the Mountains. It isn't proper.
What?
Said both her parents together.
He hasn't rescued me from a giant or an ogre or freed me from a magic spell.
Both her parents looked uncomfortable.
Well, no,
said Cimmerine's father.
It's a bit late to start arranging it, but we might be able to manage something.
I don't think it's necessary,
Cimmerine's mother said. She looked reprovingly at Cimmerine.
You've never paid attention to what was or wasn't suitable before, dear. You can't start now. Proper or not, you will marry Prince Therindil 3 weeks from Thursday.
But, Mother!
I'll send the wardrobe mistress to your room to start fitting your bride clothes,
Cimmerine's mother said firmly, and that was the end of the conversation. Cimmerine decided to try a more direct approach. She went to see Prince Therindil. He was in the castle armory, looking at swords.
Good morning, princess,
he said when he finally noticed Cimmerine.
Don't you think this is a lovely sword?
Cimmerine picked it up.
The balance is off.
I believe you're right,
said Therindil after a moment's study.
Pity. Now I'll have to find another. Is there something I can do for you?
Yes. You cannot marry me.
What?
Therindil looked confused.
You don't really want to marry me, do you?
Well, not exactly. I mean, in a way, that is...
Oh, good, Cimmerine said, correctly interpreting this muddled reply as...
No, not at all.
Then you'll tell your father you don't want to marry me?
I couldn't do that. It wouldn't be right.
Why not?
Because princes just don't do that.
Then how are you going to keep from marrying me?
I guess I won't be able to,
Therindil said, after thinking hard for a moment.
How do you like that sword over there? The one with the silver hilt?
Cimmerine left in disgust and went out to the castle garden. She was very discouraged. It looked as if she were going to marry the Prince of Satham by the Mountains, whether she wanted to or not.
I'd rather be eaten by a dragon, she muttered.
That can be arranged,
said a voice from beside her left slipper. Cimmerine looked down and saw a small green frog looking up at her.
I beg your pardon. Did you speak?
You don't see anyone else around, do you?
Said the frog.
Oh,
said Cimmerine. She had never met a talking frog before.
Are you an enchanted prince?
She asked a little doubtfully.
No, but I've met a couple of them. And after a while, you pick up a few things. Now, why is it that you want to be eaten by a dragon?
My parents want me to marry Prince Therindil.
And you don't want to? Sensible of you. I don't like Therindil. He used to skip rocks across the top of my pond. They always sank into my living room.
I'm sorry.
Well, what are you going to do about it?
Marrying Therindil? I don't know. I've tried talking to my parents, but they won't listen. And neither will Therindil.
I didn't ask what you'd said about it. I asked what you're going to do. 9 times out of 10, talking is a way of avoiding doing things.
What kinds of things would you suggest?
You could challenge the prince to a duel.
He'd win. It's been 4 years since I've been allowed to do any fencing.
You could turn him into a toad.
I never got past invisibility in my magic lessons. Transformations are advanced study.
The frog looked at her disapprovingly.
Can't you do anything?
I can curtsy. I know 17 different country dances, 9 ways to agree with an ambassador from Cathay without actually promising him anything, and 143 embroidery stitches. And I can make Cherry's Jubilee.
Cherry's Jubilee?
Asked the frog and snapped at a passing fly.
The castle chef taught me before Father made him stop.
The frog munched briefly, then swallowed and said,
I suppose there's no help for it. You'll have to run away.
Run away? I don't like that idea. Too many things could go wrong.
You don't like the idea of marrying Prince Therindil either.
Maybe I can think of some other way out of getting married.
The frog snorted.
Such as?
Cimmerine didn't answer, and after a moment the frog said,
I thought so. Do you want my advice or not?
Yes, please,
said Cimmerine. After all, she didn't have to follow it.
Go to the main road outside the city and follow it away from the mountains. After a while, you will come to a small pavilion made of gold, surrounded by trees made of silver with emerald leaves. Go straight past it without stopping, and don't answer if anyone calls out to you from the pavilion. Keep on until you reach a hovel. Walk straight up to the door and knock 3 times. Then, snap your fingers and go inside. You'll find some people there who can help you out of your difficulties, if you're polite about asking, and they're in the right mood. And that's all.
The frog turned abruptly and dove into the pool.
Thank you very much,
Cimmerine called after it, thinking that the frog's advice sounded very odd indeed. She rose and went back into the castle. She spent the rest of the day being fitted and fussed over by her ladies-in-waiting until she was ready to scream. By the end of the formal banquet, at which she had to sit next to Prince Therindil and listen to endless stories of his prowess in battle, Cimmerine was more than ready to take the frog's advice. Late that night, when most of the castle was asleep, Cimmerine bundled up 5 clean handkerchiefs and her best crown. Then she dug out the notes she had taken during her magic lessons and carefully cast a spell of invisibility. It seemed to work, but she was still very watchful as she sneaked out of the castle. After all, it had been a long time since she had practiced. By morning, Cimmerine was well outside the city and visible again, walking down the main road that led away from the mountains. It was hot and dusty, and she began to wish she had brought a bottle of water instead of the handkerchiefs. Just before noon, she spied a small grove of trees next to the road ahead of her. It looked like a cool, pleasant place to rest for a few minutes, and she hurried forward. When she reached the grove, however, she saw that the trees were made of the finest silver, and their shining green leaves were huge emeralds. In the center of the grove stood a charming pavilion, made of gold and hung with gold curtains. Cimmerine slowed down and looked longingly at the cool green shade beneath the trees. Just then, a woman's voice called out from the pavilion.
My dear, you look so tired and thirsty. Come and sit with me and share my luncheon.
The voice was so kind and coaxing that Cimmerine took 2 steps toward the edge of the road before she remembered the frog's advice.
Oh, no,
she thought to herself.
I'm not going to be caught this easily.
She turned without saying anything and hurried on down the road. A little farther on, she came to a tiny, wretched-looking hovel made of cracked and weathered gray boards. The door hung slantwise on a broken hinge, and the whole building looked as though it were going to topple over at any moment. Cimmerine stopped and stared doubtfully at it. But she had followed the frog's advice this far, and she thought it would be silly to stop now. So she shook the dust from her skirts and put on her crown, so as to make a good impression. She marched up to the door, knocked 3 times, and snapped her fingers, just as the frog had told her. Then she pushed the door open and went in. 2. In which Cimmerine discovers the value of a classical education and has some unwelcome visitors. Inside, the hovel was dark and cool and damp. Cimmerine found it a pleasant relief after the hot, dusty road, but she wondered why no sunlight seemed to be coming through the cracks in the boards. She was still standing just inside the door, waiting for her eyes to adjust to the dark, when someone said crossly,
Is this that princess we've been waiting for?
Why don't you ask her?
Said a deep, rumbly voice.
I'm Princess Cimmerine of Linderwall. I was told you could help me.
Help her?
Said the first voice, and Cimmerine heard a snort.
I think we should just eat her and be done with it.
Cimmerine began to feel frightened. She wondered whether the voices belonged to ogres or trolls, and whether she could slip out of the hovel before they made up their minds about eating her. She felt behind her for the door and started in surprise when her fingers touched damp stone instead of dry wood. Then a third voice said,
Not so fast, Warog. Let's hear her story first.
So Cimmerine took a deep breath and began to explain about the fencing lessons and the magic lessons and the Latin and the juggling and all the other things that weren't considered proper behavior for a princess. And she told the voices that she had run away from Satham-by-the-Mountains to keep from having to marry Prince Therindil.
And what do you expect us to do about it?
One of the voices asked curiously.
I don't know. Except, of course, that I would rather not be eaten. I can't see who you are in this dark, you know.
That can be fixed,
said the voice. A moment later, a small ball of light appeared in the air above Cimmerine's head. Cimmerine stepped backward very quickly and ran into the wall. The voices belonged to dragons. Five of them lay on or sprawled over or curled around the various rocks and columns that filled the huge cave where Cimmerine stood. Each of the males, there were three, had two short, stubby, sharp-looking horns on either side of their heads. The female dragon had three, one on each side and one in the center of her forehead. The last dragon was apparently still too young to have made up its mind which sex it wanted to be. It didn't have any horns at all. Cimmerine felt very frightened. The smallest of the dragons was easily three times as tall as she was, and they gave an overwhelming impression of shining green scales and sharp silver teeth. They were much scarier in person than in the pictures she remembered from her natural history books. She swallowed very hard, wondering whether she really would rather be eaten by a dragon than marry Therendil.
Well?
Said the three-horned dragon just in front of her.
Just what are you asking us to do for you?
Cimmerine stopped short as an idea occurred to her. Cautiously, she asked,
Dragons are fond of princesses, aren't they?
Very,
said the dragon and smiled. The smile showed all her teeth, which Cimmerine did not find reassuring.
That is, I've heard of dragons who have captive princesses to cook for them and so on,
said Cimmerine, who had very little idea what captive princesses did all day. The dragon in front of Cimmerine nodded. One of the others, a yellowish green in color, shifted restlessly and said,
Oh, let's just go ahead and eat her. It will save trouble.
Before any of the other dragons could answer, there was a loud, booming noise, and a sixth dragon slithered into the cave. His scales were more gray than green, and the dragons by the door made way for him, respectfully.
Khazul,
said the newcomer in a loud voice.
Sorry I'm late, but a terrible thing happened on the way here.
What was it?
Said the dragon to whom Cimmerine had been talking.
Ran into a wizard. Had to eat him? No help for it. Now look at me.
Every time the gray-green dragon sneezed, he emitted a small ball of fire that scorched the wall of the cave.
Calm down, Roxim. You're only making it worse.
Calm down? When I'm having an allergy attack? Oh, bother.
Said the gray-green dragon.
Somebody give me a handkerchief.
Here, said Cimmerine, holding out one of the ones she had brought with her. Use this.
She was beginning to feel much less frightened, for the gray-green dragon reminded her of her great-uncle, who was old and rather hard of hearing, and of whom she was rather fond.
What's that? Oh, hurry up. Give it here.
Khazul took the handkerchief from Cimmerine, using two claws very delicately, and passed it to Roxim. The gray-green dragon mopped his streaming eyes and blew his nose.
That's better, I think. Oh, brat.
The ball of fire that accompanied the dragon's sneeze had reduced the handkerchief to a charred scrap. Cimmerine hastily dug out another one and handed it to Khazul, feeling very glad that she had brought several spares. Roxim went through two more handkerchiefs before his sneezing spasms finally stopped.
Much better. Now then, who's this that lent me the handkerchiefs? Somebody's new princess, eh?
We were just discussing that when you came in,
Khazul said, and turned back to Cimmerine.
You were saying about cooking and so on.
Couldn't I do that for one of you for a while?
The dragon smiled again, and Cimmerine swallowed hard.
Possibly. Why would you want to do that?
Because then I wouldn't have to go home and marry Therendil. Being a dragon's princess is a perfectly respectable thing to do, so my parents couldn't complain. And it would be much more interesting than embroidery and dancing lessons.
Several of the dragons made snorting or choking noises. Cimmerine jumped, then decided that they were laughing.
This is ridiculous,
said a large, bright green dragon on Cimmerine's left.
Why?
Asked K'Zul.
A princess volunteering? Out of the question.
That's easy for you to say,
one of the other dragons grumbled.
You already have a princess. What about the rest of us?
Yes, don't be stuffy, Warog,
said another.
Besides, what else can we do with her?
Eat her,
suggested the yellowish-green dragon in a bored tone.
No proper princess would come out looking for dragons,
Warog objected.
Well, I'm not a proper princess, then. I make Cherry's Jubilee, and I volunteer for dragons, and I conjugate Latin verbs. Or at least I would if anyone would let me. So there.
Hear, hear,
said the gray-green dragon.
You see? Who would want an improper princess?
I would.
You can't be serious, K'Zul.
Warog said irritably.
Why?
I like Cherry's Jubilee,
K'Zul replied, still watching Cimmerine.
And I like the look of her. Besides, the Latin scrolls in my library need cataloging. And if I can't find someone who knows a little of the language, I'll have to do it myself.
Give her a trial run first,
a purplish-green dragon advised. Warog snorted.
Latin and Cherry's Jubilee. And for that you'd take on a blackhead, snippy little...
I'll thank you to be polite when you're discussing my princess,
K'Zul said, and smiled fiercely.
Nice little girl,
Roxham said, nodding approvingly and waving Cimmerine's next-to-last handkerchief.
Got sense. Be good for you, K'Zul.
If that's settled, I'm going to go find a snack,
said the yellowish-green dragon. Warog looked around, but the other dragon seemed to agree with Roxham.
Oh, very well. It's your choice, after all, K'Zul.
It certainly is. Now, princess, if you'll come this way, I'll get you settled in.
Cimmerine followed K'Zul across the cave and down a tunnel. To her relief, the ball of light came with her. She had the uncomfortable feeling that if she had tried to walk behind K'Zul in the dark, she would have stepped on her tail, which would not have been a good beginning. K'Zul led Cimmerine through a long maze of tunnels and finally stopped in another cave.
Here we are. You can use the small room over on the right. I believe my last princess left most of the furnishings behind when she ran off with the knight.
Thank you. When do I start my duties, and what are they, please?
You start right away. I'll want dinner at 7. In the meantime, you can begin sorting the treasure.
The dragon nodded toward a dark opening on the left.
I'm sure some of it needs repairing. There's at least one suit of armor with the leg off. And some of the cheaper magic swords are probably getting rusty. The rest of it really ought to be rearranged sensibly. I can never find anything when I want it.
What about the library you mentioned?
We'll see how well you do on the treasure room first. The rest of your job I'll explain as we go along. You don't object to learning a little magic, do you?
Not at all.
Good. It'll make things much easier. Go and wash up, and I'll let you into the treasure room so you can get started.
Cimmerine nodded and went to the room K'Zul had told her to use. As she washed her face and hands, she felt happier than she had in a long time. She was not going to have to marry Therindil, and sorting a dragon's treasure sounded far more interesting than dancing or embroidery. She was even going to learn some magic, and her parents wouldn't worry about her once they found out where she was. For the first time in her life, Cimmerine was glad she was a princess. She dried her hands and turned to go back into the main cave, wondering how best to persuade K'Zul to help her brush up on her Latin. She didn't want the dragon to be disappointed in her skill.
Draco, Draconum, Dracone,
she muttered, and her lips curved into a smile. She had always been rather good at declining nouns. Still smiling, she started forward to begin her new duties. Cimmerine settled in very quickly. She got along well with K'Zul and learned her way around the caves with a minimum of mishaps. Actually, the caves were more like an intricate web of tunnels, connecting caverns of various shapes and sizes that belonged to individual dragons. It reminded Cimmerine of an underground city with tunnels instead of streets. She had no idea how far the tunnels extended, though she rather suspected that some of them had been magicked, so that when you walked down them you went a lot farther than you thought you were going. Kuzul's section of the caves was fairly large, in addition to the kitchen, which was in a large cave near the exit, so that there wouldn't be a problem with the smoke from the fire. She had a sleeping cavern, 3 enormous treasure rooms at the far end of an intricate maze of twisty little passages, 2 even more enormous storage rooms for less valuable items, a library, a large bear cave for eating and visiting with other dragons, and the set of rooms assigned to Cimmerine. All the caves smelled of dragon, a somewhat musty, smoky, cinnamony smell. Cimmerine's first job was to air them out. Cimmerine's rooms consisted of 3 small connecting caves just off Kazul's living cavern. They were furnished very comfortably in a mixture of styles and periods, and looked just like the guest rooms in most of the castles Cimmerine had visited, only without windows. They were much too small for a dragon to get inside. When asked, Kazul said that the dwarves had made them in return for a favor, and the dragon's tone prevented Cimmerine from inquiring too closely into just what sort of favor it had been. By the end of the first week, Cimmerine was sure enough of her position to give Kazul a list of things that she needed in the kitchen. The previous princess, of whom Cimmerine was beginning to have a very poor opinion, had apparently made do with a large skillet with 3 dents and a wobbly handle, a wooden mixing bowl with a crack in it, a badly tarnished copper tea kettle, and an assortment of mismatched plates, cups, and silverware, most of them chipped or bent. Kazul seemed pleased by the request, and the following day, Cimmerine had everything she had asked for, except for a few of the more exotic pans and dishes. This made the cooking considerably easier, and gave Cimmerine more time to spend studying Latin and sorting treasure. The treasure was just as disorganized as Kazul had told her, and putting it in order was a major task. It was sometimes hard to tell whether a ring was enchanted, and Cimmerine knew better than to put it on and see. It might be the sort of useful magic ring that turned you invisible, but it might also be the sort of ring that turned you into a frog. Cimmerine did the best she could and kept a pile in the corner for things she was not sure about. There was a great deal of treasure to be sorted. Most of it was stacked in one of the innermost caves in a large, untidy heap of crowns, rings, jewels, swords, and coins, but Cimmerine kept finding things in other places as well, some of them quite unlikely. There was a small helmet under her bed, along with a great deal of dust, a silver bracelet set with opals on the reading table in the library, and 2 daggers and a jeweled inkpot behind the kitchen stove. Cimmerine collected them all, along with the other things that were simply lying around in the halls, and put them back in the storerooms where they belonged, thinking to herself that dragons were clearly not very tidy creatures. The first of the knights arrived at the end of the second week. Cimmerine was busy cleaning swords. Kazul had been right about their condition. Not only were some of them rusty, but nearly all of them needed sharpening. She was polishing the last flakes of rust from an enormous broadsword when she heard someone calling from the mouth of the cave. Feeling somewhat irritated by the interruption, she rose and, carrying the sword, went to see who it was. As she came nearer to the entrance, she was able to make out the words that whoever it was shouting.
"Dragon! Come out and fight! Fight for the Princess Cimmerine of Linderwall!"
"Oh, honestly," Cimmerine muttered, and quickened her step.
"Here, you,"
she said as she came out into the sunlight. Then she had to duck as a spear flashed through the air over her head.
"Stop that! I'm Princess Cimmerine!"
"You are? Are you sure? I mean..."
Cimmerine raised her head cautiously and squinted. It was still fairly early in the morning, and the sun was in back of the person standing outside the cave, so that it was difficult to see anything but the outline of his figure against the brightness.
"Of course I'm sure. What did you expect? Letters of reference? Come around here where I can see who you are, please."
The figure moved sideways, and a Cimmerine saw that it was a knight in shiny new armor, except for the legs, where the armor was dusty from walking. Cimmerine wondered briefly why he hadn't ridden, but decided not to ask. The knight's visor was raised, and a few wisps of sandy hair showed above his handsome face. He was studying her with an expression of worried puzzlement.
What can I do for you?
Cimmerine said, after several moments had gone by, and the knight still hadn't said anything.
Well, if you are the Princess Cimmerine, I've come to rescue you from the dragon.
Cimmerine set the point of the broadsword on the ground and leaned on it as if it were a walking cane.
I thought that might be it, but I'd rather not be rescued, thank you just the same.
Not be rescued?
The knight's puzzled look deepened.
But princesses always...
No, they don't,
Cimmerine said firmly, recognizing the beginning of a familiar argument.
And even if I wanted to be rescued, you're going at it all wrong.
What?
Said the knight, thoroughly taken aback.
Shouting, come out and fight, the way you did. No self-respecting dragon is going to answer to a challenge like that. It sounds like a child's dare. Dragons are very conscious of their dignity. At least all of the ones I've met so far are.
Oh,
said the knight, sounding very crestfallen.
What should I have said?
Stand forth and do battle is the usual challenge,
Cimmerine said with authority, remembering her princess lessons. She had always been more interested in what the knights and dragons were supposed to say than in memorizing the places where she was supposed to scream.
But the wording doesn't have to be exact, as long as it's suitably formal. You're new at this, aren't you?
Rescuing you was going to be my first big quest. You're sure you don't want to be rescued?
Quite sure. I like living with Kazool.
You like?
The knight stared at her for a moment. Then his expression cleared and he said,
Of course! The dragon's enchanted you! I should have thought of that before.
Kazool has not enchanted me, and I do not want to be rescued by anybody,
Cimmerine said, alarmed by the knight's sudden enthusiasm.
This place suits me very well. I like polishing swords and cooking Cherry's Jubilee and reading Latin scrolls. If you don't believe me, ask anyone in Linderwall. They've been complaining about my un-princess-like behavior for years.
I did hear something about fencing lessons, but knights aren't supposed to pay attention to that kind of thing. We're supposed to be above rumors and gossip.
The fencing lessons were just the beginning,
Cimmerine assured him.
So you see why I'm perfectly happy being a dragon's princess?
Yes?
Said the knight. But he did not look convinced.
Speaking of dragons, where's yours?
Kazool's not my dragon. I'm her princess. You'll never have any luck dealing with dragons if you don't get these things straight. She's gone to the enchanted forest on the other side of the mountains to borrow a crepe pan from a witch she knows.
She's what?
She's gone to borrow a crepe pan. Perhaps you better have your helmet checked when you get back. They're not supposed to interfere with your hearing, but sometimes...
Oh, I heard you. But what does a dragon want with a crepe pan?
She doesn't want it. I do. I found a recipe in the library that I want to try, and the kitchen just isn't equipped to handle anything but the most ordinary cooking. Kazool will fix that eventually, but for the time being, we have to borrow things like crepe pans and souffle dishes.
You really do like it here,
the knight said wonderingly. Cimmerine refrained from replying that this was what she had been trying to tell him all along, and instead said,
How did you know where I was?
Things get around.
The knight waved a hand in a vague manner.
In fact, I had to hurry to make sure I was the first. Half of the kingdom of Linderwall and a princess's hand in marriage is a reward rich enough to tempt a lot of people who wouldn't normally bother with this sort of thing.
Father's offered half the kingdom to whoever rescues me? That's more than all my sister's dowries put together.
It's the usual thing in cases like this.
It would be,
Cimmerine said in tones of deep disgust.
Well, at least you can go back and tell them I don't want to be rescued. Maybe that will keep anyone else from coming up here.
I can't do that. It's...
Just not done. I understand perfectly.
She gave him a polite farewell, more because she had been well brought up than because she felt like being polite, and sent him on his way. Then she went back into the cave and polished the broadsword until it was mirror bright, which relieved her feelings a little. There were two knights the following day, and four more the day after that. On the fourth day, there was only one, but he was exceptionally stubborn, and it took Cimmerine nearly 2 hours to get rid of him. By then, she was thoroughly disgusted, and even considered letting Kazool handle the knights from then on. She could not quite bring herself to do it. The knights would certainly attack Kazul as soon as they saw her, since that was what they were coming for, and sooner or later someone would get hurt. Simarine did not like to think that someone might be hurt trying to rescue her, particularly since she did not want to be rescued. So with a sigh, she decided that she would continue to handle the knights as long as Kazul would let her. Prince Ferindil showed up at the end of the third week. He was limping a little, as if his metal boots pinched his toes, and the feathers attached to the top of his helmet sagged badly. He stopped, and carefully struck an impressive pose before issuing the usual challenge. Simarine was not in a mood to be impressed. Besides, she could see that his helmet was a different style from his gold armor, and that the armor had gaps at the knees and elbows where it didn't fit together quite right.
"Aren't you a little slow?"
she asked irritably.
"There have been 8 knights here before you."
"8?"
the prince said, frowning.
"I thought by now there'd have been at least 12. Perhaps I'd better come back later."
Simarine stared at him in surprise.
"Why?"
"Well, it would look better. There's not much glory in defeating a dragon that hasn't already beaten 10 or 15 people at least. Sir Gorlax of Merstwald won't even consider going after a dragon whose score is less than 45. I don't think I want to risk waiting that long, but 8 just doesn't seem like enough."
"You're going to go away and wait until Kazul has defeated 15 knights before you come back to rescue me?"
She found Ferindil's smug confidence very annoying, but she didn't like to say so straight out.
"Not if you'd rather be rescued now, of course. Though you ought to consider the advantages. And I expect it won't be so very long."
His voice trailed off, and he looked at her hopefully.
"I'm afraid it will be a very long time,"
Simarine said with satisfaction.
"You see, Kazul hasn't defeated any knights at all yet."
But I thought you said there'd been 8.
"I said 8 of them had come by. I didn't say they'd fought anybody. I sent them away."
"You sent them away?"
Ferindil repeated, plainly horrified.
"But that's...
"Not done, I know,"
Simarine smiled sweetly.
"But I've done it, and I intend to go on doing it, so you might as well go home and warn your friends. They'd feel so foolish, you know, if they came all this way into the mountains to rescue me, and then had to turn around and go back home without doing anything."
"They certainly would. What do you mean by playing these kinds of tricks? Don't you want to be rescued?"
"No,"
said Simarine, losing her patience at last.
"I don't, and I'm tired of having my work constantly interrupted, so please go away and don't come back."
"You can't possibly mean that. Besides, everyone expects me to rescue you."
"That's your problem. I'm going to go fix dinner. Goodbye."
Before he could say anything else, she turned and ducked back into the cave, hoping the prince wouldn't follow. 3. In which Simarine meets a witch and has doubts about a wizard. Ferindil left, but he came back again the next day, and the day after that. It got so that Simarine could not even step outside the cave without running into him. She might have been flattered if it hadn't been so obvious that Ferindil was only worried about how foolish he'd look if he went home without fighting the dragon. On his 5th visit, Simarine was very sharp with him, and when he had not returned by mid-afternoon of the next day, she began to hope that he had finally left for good. Simarine was in the kitchen taking the pits out of cherries when she heard someone knocking at the mouth of the cave.
"Go away!"
she shouted in complete exasperation.
"I've told you and told you I don't want to be rescued, and I'm not going to argue with you any more."
"I didn't come here to argue,"
said a no-nonsense female voice from outside.
"I came to meet the person who keeps borrowing my crepe pan. It's not something there's normally much call for."
"Oh, dear,"
said Simarine. She wiped her hands hastily on a corner of her apron and hurried out to greet her visitor.
"I'm sorry,"
she said, coming around the gray rock at the cave mouth.
"But I've been having a problem with knights lately, and I thought..."
She stopped short as she got a good look at her collar for the first time. The woman standing outside the cave was considerably shorter than Simarine. Her ginger hair was piled in waves on top of her head. She had on a loose black robe with long sleeves, which she wore unbelted. A small pair of glasses with rectangular lenses sat firmly on her nose, and she carried an extremely twiggy broom in her left hand. Despite her unusual appearance, she projected an air of great self-assurance.
I quite understand,
she said, studying Cimmerine shrewdly.
You must be Kazul's new princess.
Yes, I'm Cimmerine, and you are?
Morwen,
said the black-robed woman, leaning the broom against the rock.
Kazul and I have been friends for a long time, ever since I moved to the Enchanted Forest, so I thought I'd come have a look at her new princess.
You're the person Kazul's been borrowing dishes from, aren't you?
Cimmerine said and blinked.
But then you must be...
A witch? I don't see why you find it surprising. It's not exactly an unusual profession in these parts.
It's just that I haven't met one before,
Cimmerine said, not mentioning the fact that in Linderwall, witches were considered dangerous and probably evil and were therefore avoided, if at all possible. But then, people in Linderwall didn't like dragons much either.
Won't you come in and have some tea?
I certainly will,
said the witch, and she did. She prowled around like a nervous cat while Cimmerine put the kettle on the stove and got out the tea things.
Well,
Morwen said approvingly as Cimmerine filled the teapot.
You're the first princess I've ever met who has the sense to keep up with the kitchen.
Cimmerine decided that she liked Morwen's down-to-earth manner. She soon found herself telling Morwen everything, from the fencing and philosophy and Latin lessons to the seemingly endless stream of knights. The story lasted through 2 cups of tea and finished with Thranduil's stubborn insistence on rescuing her.
That is absurd,
Morwen said decidedly when Cimmerine finished.
If this continues, you'll never get anything done.
I know, I keep telling them I don't want to be rescued, but they're all so honorable that none of them will tell anyone when they go back because they think it would be gossiping.
More likely, they don't want to look foolish.
Maybe. But even if they did tell people, I'm not sure anyone would believe it. I have a hard enough time convincing the knights when they show up in person.
It's just as well that your visitors have been honorable,
Morwen said, looking thoughtful.
Linderwall's a prosperous kingdom. Sooner or later, the chance of getting hold of half of it is going to tempt someone to try rescuing you, whether you want to be rescued or not.
That hadn't occurred to me, Cimmerine said with a worried frown. What can I do about it?
I'm not sure. The situation's not at all usual, you know. I've never heard of a princess volunteering for a dragon before. Which rather surprises me, now that I think of it. A dragon's princess is practically guaranteed a good marriage, so you'd think princesses from the smaller kingdoms would be clamoring for the job.
They're probably worried about being eaten. Do you think it would help if I sent my parents a letter?
Probably not,
Morwen said after a moment's consideration.
But it can't hurt to try. I'll check my spell books when I get home. It may give me an idea. I suggest that you hunt through Kazul's library. She's been collecting scrolls for centuries. You ought to be able to find something useful. Meanwhile, we'll put up a sign.
A sign?
Cimmerine stared at Morwen for a moment, then began to smile.
Road washed out. Use alternate route. Is that the kind of sign you were thinking of?
Exactly. It won't stop anyone who's really determined, but it will certainly slow them down. That should give us time to come up with something better.
The two women set to work at once, and in a short time produced a large, official-looking sign. Morwen offered to set it up on her way back to the Enchanted Forest, but Cimmerine thought it would be too awkward for her to carry while riding the broom. So, once Morwen had gone, Cimmerine tucked the sign under her arm and started down the path. Cimmerine had not had a chance to do any real exploring before, though she had looked out at the mountains every day and wondered. She was happy to have an excuse to see more of the outside of her new home. It was a lovely day, warm and sunny, and at first the path was level and easy. Cimmerine was just beginning to wonder whether anyone would believe her sign once she got it put up, when the path swung left around a boulder and narrowed to a tiny ledge that sloped steeply upward. Cimmerine stopped. Now she knew why none of the knights had ridden up to the cave. The ledge was barely wide enough for a person on foot to edge along sideways. The best rider in the world couldn't have gotten a horse down it. Cimmerine rolled her sign up into a firm, tight cylinder and stuck it through her belt so she would have her hands free while she climbed. Then she stepped out onto the ledge. Sidling up the slope took a long time, for Cimmerine was careful to make sure that each part of the ledge would hold before she trusted her weight to it. She was also careful not to look down. Heights had never bothered her before, but there was a big difference between standing solidly on top of a tower in Linderwall Castle behind a 4-foot parapet and inching along a ledge barely 6 inches wide with nothing between her and a long fall. She had almost reached the top of the slope, where the path widened again, when a portion of the ledge disappeared just ahead of her. Cimmerine pulled her foot back and tried to figure out what had happened. She hadn't seen or heard the rock crumble and fall away. There was simply a 2-foot gap in the ledge that hadn't been there before. She studied it for a moment, trying to think of a way of getting past. Nothing occurred to her. She felt a twinge of annoyance at the thought of all her wasted efforts, but cheered up at once when she realized that this would solve the problem of the visiting knights. If she couldn't get around or over the gap, an armored knight wouldn't be able to get by either. Cimmerine smiled and turned her head to creep back to safety. There was another 2-foot gap in the ledge on her other side. Cimmerine frowned. Something very odd was going on, and she didn't like it.
"You look as if you are in need of assistance,"
said a deep voice from above her.
"May I be of help?"
Cimmerine turned her head and saw a man standing 4 feet away on the path at the top of the ledge. He was tall and sharp-featured, and his eyes were a hard, bright black. Though he had a gray beard that reached nearly to his waist, his face did not look old. He wore loose robes made of blue and gray silk, and in one hand he held a staff as tall as himself made of dark, polished wood. "Possibly," Cimmerine answered. She was certain that the man was a wizard, though she had never met one before, and she did not want to agree to anything until she was sure of what she was agreeing to. The court philosopher had always claimed that wizards were very tricky.
"May I know to whom I am speaking?"
"I am the wizard Zeminar, and you must be Kazul's new princess. I hope you're not trying to run away. It's..."
"Not done,"
Cimmerine said, feeling particularly annoyed because for once she was not doing anything improper.
"Yes, I'm Cimmerine."
"I was going to say that it isn't wise to run away from your dragon,"
the wizard corrected mildly.
"I believe it's done all the time."
"I'm sorry,"
Cimmerine said, but she didn't try to explain.
"And I'm not running away. How did you know who I was?"
"It seemed unlikely that I would find any other charming young lady walking so casually through the pass of silver ice,"
Zeminar answered. He smiled.
"As you see, it is easy to find oneself in difficulties if one is not properly prepared."
Cimmerine decided that she didn't like him. He reminded her of one of her father's courtiers, a humorless, sneaky little man who had paid her compliments only when he was after something and who couldn't resist giving advice even when nobody wanted it.
"The ledge was all here when I started,"
she said. An idea crossed her mind, and she looked hard at Zeminar.
"I don't suppose you know what happened to the 2 missing bits?"
A flash of startled annoyance crossed the wizard's face. Then his expression smoothed back into pleasant politeness. He shrugged.
"The Pass of Silver Ice is a strange place. Odd things frequently occur."
"Not like this,"
Cimmerine muttered. She was sure now that the wizard had made the ledge vanish so that he could pretend to rescue her. But she had no idea why he would want her to think she owed him a favor. Actually, it surprised her that he had destroyed the ledge. She didn't think the dragons would be too happy when they found out, unless he hadn't really destroyed it.
"What did you say?"
Zeminar said, frowning uncertainly. Cimmerine ignored him. Without looking down, she slid her right foot along the ledge. The rock felt firm and solid. Slowly, she transferred her weight and brought her left foot up beside her right. She shifted again, still careful not to look down, and slid her right foot forward once again.
What are you doing?
Getting off this ledge. I should think that was obvious.
One more step would bring her to the path, but Zeminar was squarely in her way.
Would you mind moving back a little so I'll have somewhere to stand?
Zeminar's eyes narrowed, but he backed up several paces, and Cimmerine stepped onto the path. She wanted to heave a sigh of relief, but she did not. She wasn't going to let Zeminar have the satisfaction of knowing she had been worried. Instead, she gave him her best royal smile and said with polite insincerity,
"Thank you for offering to help, but as you see, it wasn't needed. Do stop by and visit sometime."
"I will,"
Zeminar said as if he meant it.
"And a very good day to you, Princess Cimmerine."
With that, he vanished. There was no smoke or fire or whirlwind. There wasn't even a shimmer in the air as he disappeared. He was simply and suddenly gone. Cimmerine stared at the place where the wizard had been and felt a shiver run down her spine. It took a very powerful wizard indeed to vanish so quietly, and she still didn't know what he wanted. She shook herself and started down the path. She would worry about the wizard later. Right now, she had to find a place to put up her sign so she could get back to the cave. She didn't feel much like exploring anymore. She hadn't taken more than 2 or 3 steps when a dark shadow passed over her. Looking up, startled, she saw a flash of yellow-green scales. An instant later, a dragon landed on the path in front of her, blocking the way completely. His tail hung over the edge, and he had to keep his wings partly unfurled in order to stay in balance. Cimmerine recognized him at once. It was the yellow-green dragon who had wanted to eat her the day she arrived so unexpectedly in the dragon's cave.
"I saw the whole thing,"
the dragon said with nasty, triumphant glee.
"Running away and talking to a wizard. Just wait until K'Zool hears. She'll be sorry she didn't just let us eat you and be done with it."
"I offer you greetings and good fortune on your travels,"
Cimmerine said, figuring that it was best to be polite to anyone as large and toothy as a dragon, even if he wasn't being at all polite to her.
"I'm not running away."
"Then what are you doing? K'Zool doesn't have any business that would bring you down this side of the pass."
"I came out to put up a sign to keep the knights away."
"That's ridiculous. I've been on patrol in this part of the mountains for the past week, and I haven't seen or smelled even a hint of a knight."
"You haven't been by K'Zool's cave, then. At least 9 of them have shown up there in the past week. Though for the past couple of days, it's been mostly a prince."
"Princes don't smell any different from knights, and I'd have noticed it if any of them were hanging around. And what about that wizard you were talking to?"
"Charge!"
shouted a familiar voice from the other side of the dragon.
"Ferindil! I told you to go away!"
The yellow-green dragon twisted his long neck and glanced back over his shoulder. He seemed to bunch together like a cat crouching. Then he sprang straight up into the air, and Cimmerine was blinded by the cloud of dust raised by the flapping of his enormous wings. She had the presence of mind to flatten herself back against the rocks by the side of the path, and a moment later she heard someone blundering by. She stuck out a foot.
"Ow!"
she said, as Ferindil fell over with a clatter. She'd forgotten that he'd be wearing iron boots along with the rest of his armor.
"Cimmerine, is that you?"
"Of course it's me,"
Cimmerine replied, rubbing her ankle.
"Open your eyes. The dust settled."
She looked up as she spoke and saw the dragon soar out of sight behind a cliff.
"I'm sorry,"
Ferindil said, and then in an anxious tone he added,
"I hope I didn't hurt you, stumbling into you like that."
Cimmerine started to say that it was nothing and that it had been her fault anyway when she suddenly got a much better idea.
I think you've sprained my ankle.
Oh, no,
Ferrandil said. He sounded truly dismayed, though Cimmerine couldn't see his face because he was wearing his helmet with the visor down.
I probably won't be able to walk for at least a month, and there's certainly no way I can climb down this mountain.
But if you can't walk,
Ferrandil said, and paused. Then he squared his shoulders and went on.
Then I suppose I'll have to carry you.
He didn't sound as if he liked the idea.
I don't think that would work very well. How will you fight when all the dragons come back if you're carrying me? No, you'll have to leave me here and go back alone.
You can't stay here,
Ferrandil protested, though Cimmerine's talk